Support for this public radio podcast comes from Society for Human Resource Management, HR, leading people, leading organizations, shrm.org, and by KeyBank Capital Markets, specializing in corporate and investment banking solutions for established and growing mid-sized companies. Visit key.com/KBCM.
Profits, what profits?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Lots of public companies will reveal their latest profit numbers this week. Several banks, IBM, Google, eBay, should give us a clear picture of how the economy and the financial mess are affecting the bottom line. We've already gotten one report this morning. Wachovia posted a surprising loss in the first quarter, 14 cents a share. And Wachovia says it'll cut its dividend. Sorry, shareholders. But the bank is raising $7 billion in capital. Looks like Wachovia's shares will be down about 12% at the open. The big Wall Street investment banks also turn in their earnings this week, and they won't be pretty either. Jill Barshay has more from New York.
The first quarter of the year won't just be remembered for Bear Stearns' brush with bankruptcy. Some of the nation's largest financial institutions, like Merrill Lynch and Citigroup, are expected to report losses, too. Al Goldman is chief market strategist at AG Edwards.
Earnings from the financial sector are going to be miserable.
Market watchers say there could be billions more write-downs. David Darst is chief investment strategist at Morgan Stanley. He worries defaults could spread from mortgages to the corporate loans, auto loans, and credit card debts banks have on their books.
Generally, when the financial sector has problems, it creates a form of frailty and weakness in other parts of the economy.
Darst says he'll be paying more attention to what bank executives predict for the rest of the year than how bad their numbers were these past 3 months. In New York, I'm Jill Barshay from Marketplace.
GE announced a downturn in profits on Friday, and that's still making waves in the markets this morning. In Asia, stocks closed more than 3% lower. European shares are down about 1% so far. The Dow starts the week at 12,325. It lost 256 points on Friday, about 2%. The NASDAQ and the S&P 500 were also down 2% on Friday. But maybe we should get some perspective. The people in Zimbabwe have economic problems way beyond what's happening here. There was an election 2 weeks ago, and they still don't know the results. The countries around Zimbabwe are getting very restless. Gretchen Wilson reports from South Africa.
It's becoming harder and harder for the region's leaders to ignore the situation in Zimbabwe. Dale McKinley is a political analyst in Johannesburg.
It's a hyper-crisis, and we've gone beyond the crisis point. When 80% of your population has no work, when there's no basic foodstuffs, we're in meltdown.
It's a meltdown that's pushed a quarter of Zimbabwe's population, an estimated 3 million people, to flee the country. Zimbabweans have flooded poor communities in neighboring countries where they compete with locals for resources. That'll continue if Zimbabwe becomes unlivable. But with inflation topping 100,000%, can it really get any worse?
Yes, it can get worse. Even those goods that are available could disappear even further. These basic issues, water, electricity, things that people need to survive, there's no indication that these are getting any better. In fact, they're getting worse.
The region's leaders called on Zimbabwe to release election results quickly to avoid greater instability. In Johannesburg, I'm Gretchen Wilson for Marketplace.
This is the Morning Report for Monday, April 14th on Marketplace.org. We talked about the food problems in Zimbabwe, but all over the world, food prices are starting to become a serious issue. Over the weekend, finance ministers from the G7 countries met in Washington, and they talked a lot about food. More now from Stephen Beard.
The head of the World Bank said the rapid rise in food prices could push 100 million people into even deeper poverty. The head of the IMF warned of mass starvation and war. Wheat has more than doubled in price over the past year. Rice, soya and corn have all shot up too, for many reasons. Climate change has affected farming. The rising cost of oil has made agriculture more expensive. And, says Ian Bray of the aid agency Oxfam, the switch to growing biofuels is also to blame.
Instead of growing food for feeding people, we'll be growing food for feeding our cars. It's extremely land hungry, and this is what's shooting up the price, along with many other factors, what's shooting up the price of food.
The leaders meeting in Washington supported a World Bank New Deal for food and called on donors to stump up an extra $500 million in funding for short-term relief. In London, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
City governments and states are looking for ways to bring in extra revenue during this economic downturn. So, time to roll out the red carpet for Hollywood. New York just tripled its tax credits for movie and TV productions. Here's Stacey Vanek Smith.
Last year, film production brought $9 billion into New York and created 60,000 jobs. With the economy cooling, states like Rhode Island, Michigan, and South Carolina are hoping to get a piece of the action as well. They've offered millions in tax credits and other incentives to lure filmmakers. But there's another reason states are making the big pitch now. Porter Bibb is with Media Tech Capital Partners.
They've seen some vulnerability in productions that were, over the last 10 or 15 years, going mainly to Canada. But the Canadian dollar's increase against the U.S. dollar has made that a significantly less attractive production site.
But incentives can be risky. Bibb points out that South Carolina has spent millions subsidizing payroll taxes and building a backlot and studio, but the movie makers didn't come. And Rhode Island is blaming part of its multi-million dollar budget deficit on incentives it gave to the movies. I'm Stacey Vanek Smith for Marketplace.
It's time once again for our occasional series, My Morning Commute.
Let's see how the roads are rolling with Time Saver Traffic.
Here's go around me!
Would you pull over and let me drive?
Today we hear about kind of a different way to carpool in the nation's capital. It's called slugging. Let's meet our commuter.
I'm Gary Lindsay. I'm Director of Business Partnerships with Partnership for Prevention in Washington, D.C. And this is my morning commute. I usually get in my car in the morning. It's about a five-minute drive over to the park and ride, and I stand with other people that are looking for an impromptu car ride into work. And the big thing is that I saved the bus fare. So I figured last year I saved over $1,000 doing slug rides.
Slugging is kind of referred to as casual carpooling. Drivers usually pull up and they'll have a sign that'll say 14th and New York Avenue or Union Station. It's carpooling, but it's you don't have any plans to do it. You just pull up and someone jumps in the car and you're a carpool.
The term slug, I thought it meant sort of like you're living off someone else, but the term I think meant like a coin that you would put into a subway machine in like New York that would be not the true coin, but a slug, and hence saving money, not using real currency to get into work. When we first moved here, a realtor said, well, you can slug. And she said, that's where perfect strangers jump in the car and you get in the high occupancy vehicle lanes, the HOV lanes. And we looked at her like, what planet are you from? Sometimes you don't want to get in the car with people, and there's the drivers from hell. One of them is a lady who has book on tapes. I think it's like a romance novel, and it's up really loud, and the heater's always on high. As a slug, you can't say turn down the heat, turn down the radio. You just have to sit and endure it all the way into Washington. You know, it might take almost the same amount of time to slug in as opposed to taking the bus, but in a lot of ways, it's more relaxed because I'm not driving, and I can do something else while I'm doing that. And so it works out pretty well for me.
Good morning, LaJoyce.
Here I am at work, 18th and K. It's another day in the life of commuting by Gary.
This installment of My Morning Commute was produced by Stephen Hoffman and Kat Schiffler. If you have an interesting commute, let us know about it at marketplace.org.
And now it's time for the Sloan Sessions.
Tomorrow is you-know-what day. Taxes might be a little easier to swallow this year because of those rebate checks. Of course, if your income is too high, you're not getting one. But Alan Sloan says you might get a better deal. The stimulus package increased the loan limits for mortgages from FHA, Fannie Mae, and Freddie Mac to more than $700,000. So, Alan, I guess over time that would be more beneficial?
Well, yeah. I mean, if we were to get, say, a $700,000 mortgage on our house, or we're selling it to someone who takes out a $700,000 mortgage, the savings on the interest by getting one of these loans is somewhere between $1,400 and $9,000 a year. And you know what? I somehow think that's more valuable than $1,200 once.
Yeah, but Alan, I know you. I know you don't think that the government should be doing this.
I really don't. Now, if I were a home builder, what this does is this greatly increases the market for homes for, say, the $450,000 and up range up to maybe $1 million. So, I mean, if I were a home builder, I'd be thrilled. But, I mean, for me, I don't see why we're doing this, especially when this is a gift, okay, from the government, you know, the cheaper financing that doesn't show up as a budget expenditure. Unlike, say, the checks that they're sending people who are less fortunate than my wife and me.
Mm-hmm.
And it's worth a lot more money. I just don't think this is any way to run a country, but no one lets me run the country.
But a lot of people criticize this rebate check idea as worthless, that it's really not going to do much for the economy. What about this idea? Do you think this could spark the housing market?
Clearly, the housing market would be better this way than not doing it, especially in the range of house where I happen to live and where my friends, for the most part, happen to live, you know, in our happy, upscale suburban communities. But I thought it would be good to point out to people that this little thing here is worth far more to upper-income people in high-cost areas than the checks they're sending most of the country. But, you know, Scott, if you can convince the government to send me a check, I'll take that too.
All right. Alan Sloan from Fortune Magazine. Thanks.
You're welcome.
There is a potential deal floating out there this morning. Blockbuster said it's made an offer to buy Circuit City for about $1 billion. The company actually proposed this 2 months ago, but Circuit City didn't respond. So now Blockbuster is going straight to shareholders. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for listening, and enjoy your Monday.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.